I can give you the history of why we don't have CIN23 included in the NCI registries or even in the CDC registry. And it has a lot to do with what both Susan and Aaron mentioned, which is there's tremendous inconsistency across pathology reading. And the registry systems, and actually it was a SEER that initially had CIN23 or high-grade lesions as part of their reporting and eliminated it. And I think that elimination occurred sometime in the early 80s. And Mona, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Was it 1990s? And it was only Michigan that continued. And the reason for that is there are such huge challenges in getting consistent reporting for these lesions. So I just want to reinforce what a huge effort it is on CDC's part to establish that in these sentinel sites and really work to make sure there's consistency and be able to utilize those data in meaningful ways to look at vaccine efficacy. And I'm just going to say one more point about that. Of course, showing population effectiveness is intensely dependent and probably entirely dependent on getting dissemination of vaccine to the population. So while all these systems are being established, if we're not getting vaccine out there, we'll never be able to look at the effectiveness. So there's a lot of activity that needs to occur as we're moving forward in the next 5, 10, and so on years. I'm going to shift topics. And actually, this is the first in a series to talk about males and male vaccination. And so what I'm going to be presenting today is the efficacy of Gardasil, which is a Merck vaccine directed against 4 HPV types 6, 11, 16, and 18, against external genital lesions that are due to 14 types in men. And I'm presenting this on behalf of our investigative team for the male quadrivalent HPV vaccine trial. So we have previously shown in several phase 3 trials that Gardasil is well tolerated. We know it's highly efficacious in women to prevent cervical neoplasia, as well as external genital lesions associated with the 4 vaccine types. And we're so confident, obviously, FDA licensed the vaccine, and we have really broad policy recommendations for dissemination of vaccine. And as you heard here, clearly moving on to now look at effectiveness of this vaccine in female populations. What I think is not as well understood by most providers and really all of us in the community is that HPV does cause a substantial burden of disease in males, and this is both in men and in boys. And I just kind of want to sort of review that for you. We have genital warts that occur in males, very similar to what you see in females. And in fact, the incidence of genital warts is higher in males than it is in females. And as you heard earlier in Susan's talk, 90% of those warts are due to 2 HPV types, primarily 6 and 11. In a pediatric population, usually 2 to 4 year olds, and then also young adult males in their early 20s, there's a condition called respiratory papillomatosis, which is laryngeal papillomas, again, primarily caused by 6 and 11. And then we also have anal cancer, and this is a cancer that is caused predominantly by HPV 16 and 18. It affects both men and women, and the cancers have been increasing in incidence here in the United States. And then we also have these oropharyngeal cancers caused, again, primarily by 16 and 18, that occur in men and women, but in a much higher incidence among males compared to females. And then we also know that HPV is sexually transmitted, and therefore prevention of infection may reduce the risk of transmission to women. So there are several reasons why HPV infection in males are important, both in terms of disease burden to the males, as well as the overall burden of infection in the community and the transmission dynamics that occur. Well, we've recently completed the first phase 3 trial of Gardasil, of any HPV vaccine actually, in a male population. And so I'm just going to briefly describe that study design. It's the trial, it was a phase 3 trial, although relatively small compared to what you've seen for the female program where there were like 18,000 women randomized. So the primary aims though of the trial, again, very similar to what you've seen in females, the first and always is to establish the safety of the vaccine in this population. The second primary aim was to actually establish efficacy. And in this trial, how we defined efficacy was a combined incidence of lesions that were related to HPV 6, 11, 16, and 18. And there were two main populations that were recruited to this study. The main population, and this included both heterosexual men, or HM, as well as men who have sex with men, where we looked at external genital warts as well as the precancerous lesions. These are penile, perianal, perineal, intraepithelial neoplasia. So you heard about cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, the precursor to invasive cervical cancer. These are lesions that are the precursor to invasive penile cancer. And then we did have cancer as an endpoint, but understood up front that we probably wouldn't have any cases, as this is a young population recruited, and these cancers occur in older individuals. There's a sub-study of men who have sex with men, and in this sub-study, in addition to looking at the external genital lesions and infections, we also looked at anal intraepithelial neoplasia. Again, that same terminology, it's the lesion precursor to invasive anal cancer. And also, we had anal cancer as an endpoint, although, again, we recognized that it would be doubtful that we'd actually see any cases of frank cancer. And then finally, the third primary aim was to look at immunogenicity. What was the immune response in males in this age group to the vaccine? Our secondary aims were to look at the infection endpoints, and there were two. One is the incidence of persistent infection. We know at the cervical epithelium that persistent infections are the only infections that actually progress to a lesion. And so this is a particularly important infection endpoint in the male study. And then we also looked at infection that occurred at one or more times. So this was a randomized trial, randomized 1-to-1, double blind, placebo controlled. The dosing regimen is exactly as you see in the label for females. Three doses of Gardasil or placebo were given at time zero, month two, and 6 months. And the trial was designed with a 3-year follow-up period. What I'm showing you are data after 30 months of follow-up. And this is when we had our first closed data file for this trial. In terms of the numbers enrolled, the majority of the participants were classified as heterosexual men. We had around 3,400 heterosexual men ages 16 to 23 enrolled, and approximately 600 men who have sex with men in the age range 16 to 26 that were enrolled. In terms of inclusion-exclusion, remember this is a prevention trial, so we wanted to make sure to exclude individuals who had the endpoint of interest prior to enrolling in the trial. So men could not have had evidence of genital lesions or genital warts, and there was an attempt made to restrict the prevalence or limit the prevalence of HPV entering the study. So we had a sexual history eligibility criteria, and for the heterosexual men, they had to have had 5 or less lifetime number of sexual partners, and for the men who have sex with men, it was the same number, except in this case, we wanted to make sure we actually had an MSM population, and so they had to identify themselves as MSM and have engaged in oral sex or receptive or insertive anal sex with another man in the recent past, and that's in the last year. We had a total of 9 visits, and I'm just gonna quickly go through this, and they're all related to actually ascertaining DNA HPV status and antibody status at enrollment, which is day one, and then following for safety through the vaccination period very carefully, and then at month 7 and the follow-up period, actually looking for those endpoints through genital exams, through collection of blood specimens for the antibody analyses, as well as continuing to collect medical history. We have here, you see this last bullet, and this is also true for the female studies. There's always a concern when you're looking at HPV DNA on an epithelium that you can distinguish deposition, I just had sex, so now I have HPV virions on my skin, versus a true infection. And so several of us have attempted to do that, and how we do that is by asking study participants to refrain from sexual activity 2 days prior to the actual visit. It's impossible to eliminate the question of deposition, but it helps us to sort of limit the effect of deposition, and really, we think, are getting more at the infection. There were several swabs that were obtained in males, and there's a long story around how to sample men, and actually CDC has been a part and parcel in helping to decipher how best to do that. But essentially, we collected 3 external genital swabs, penile, scrotal, perineal, and perianal. And in addition, there was a 4th swab that was obtained from the men who have sex with men population, which was an intraanal swab. And again, for the MSM population, in addition to these external genital swabs, there were specimens that were obtained in the intraanal canal for anal cytology, and that's what gives us our AIN endpoint. And then finally, biopsies were obtained, and this is both from the external genital skin as well as the anal canal, to ensure the actual pathology diagnosis of the lesion, and then allow us to look at type distribution within the lesion, so we can attribute vaccine efficacy appropriately. So what I just want to preface and say that we have previously shown what the efficacy of the vaccine is for men in terms of reducing external genital lesions caused by the 4 vaccine types, and just to let you know, that efficacy is 90.4%. What I'm going to be showing today is a broader efficacy, so it's a broader population, not restricted to just those 4 vaccine types. But before I do that, I just want to show you what happens with randomization, and this is, you know, why clinical trials are such a beautiful design. We really can control and sort of equalize all other factors and only have the vaccine as the one difference between the 2 populations we're comparing. And what I'm showing you here is that if you look at the sociodemographic characteristics and sexual orientation, you clearly see that we achieved balance in terms of the populations that were randomized to the active vaccine compared to the placebo, and in fact see no statistically significant differences between the 2 populations. This gives us the confidence to then go ahead and do straight comparisons in terms of efficacy. What I'm presenting today in terms of the efficacy population is what we call the generally HPV-naive population. This is a subgroup of men who entered the study PCR negative to each of these 14 HPV types at day 1. So not only were they negative for the vaccine types, but they were also negative for all the other types that you see listed here. They were also antibody negative for HPV 6, 11, 16, and 18, which tells us that they likely did not have a prior infection with these 4 types. These are individuals who received at least 1 dose of vaccine or placebo and had follow-up that occurred in terms of case counting 1 day after they received the 1st dose. So we immediately start counting cases, and this is among the population that were relatively free of HPV at enrollment. Now, you heard earlier that there are like 37 different types that we type for. We didn't have all that information. So it's possible that some of these men were positive for these non-oncogenic types, but for the types that we looked at, they were negative. So these are our analyses of efficacy against external genital lesions due to any HPV type. And just to orient you, we're comparing the group that received vaccine compared to the group that received placebo. And you can see that our efficacy is quite robust. So remember, the vaccine's directed against 4 types, but we're looking at reduction of any external genital lesion, regardless of the type. And we find that the efficacy is 81.5%, and if I can get my pointer back, and you can see that the confidence interval is quite narrow, so we have a lot of confidence around this estimate. When we look at efficacy against the 4 types, EGLs caused by the 4 types of vaccine, this is end of study data, so it's slightly higher, 90.8%. And then you can see here, but our efficacy has been per vaccine type. In looking at, and that was the overall, so now when we look at efficacy against external genital lesions due to any of the 10 additional types that we are not directing against in the vaccine. So the vaccine is against 4 types, here an additional 10 types, and in fact we find robust efficacy, although this does not reach statistical significance. We see efficacy of 67.1%. And because these are rare types and the study was not powered to look at it, it's not surprising that we do not have statistical significance when we parcel it out by HPV type. But in just scanning the table, you can see that it looks favorable. Certainly other studies would have to be conducted to ever be able to make any conclusive statements about that. And then finally, in terms of safety, we very clearly showed, similar to what's been demonstrated in the female studies, that we have a relatively good safety profile. Most of the adverse events that were reported were related to injection site, and you can see both the vaccine group and placebo group reported a lot, and most of that is, ouch, it hurts. We actually also had reports of systemic adverse experiences. The majority of those were low-grade temperatures. But I think what's most important to show is that we had no serious vaccine-related adverse experiences, and this is a really important finding for the study. So in conclusion, Gardasil was highly efficacious against the vaccine types of external genital lesions in men that are naive to vaccine HPV types at baseline. Based on these data from the trial, FDA recently approved the use of Gardasil in males ages 9 to 26 to prevent genital warts. The efficacy data for the non-vaccine type EGLs were not conclusive due to the small sample size. Although you saw that efficacy estimate, it's very encouraging. As a high proportion of EGLs is associated with the vaccine type 6 and 11, vaccine impact on overall incidence of these external genital lesions in HPV naive populations is expected to be high. Okay, open for questions. Thank you. Lori? Oh, in women.
Because it seems like if that's what you're trying to look at, that
right,
would be a
right
place to look at it.
So I know in the female program, a similar analysis looking at the generally HPV naive population has been looked at. I don't know whether those data are actually published or not. And then the question is, did they look at it for separate endpoints, one for condyloma and the other for CIN? My guess is yes, I'm sure that's been done. Whether it's published and where it is another question.
Well, they definitely looked at the non-vaccine types for the cervical endpoints, but I've never seen
right
this analysis in women.
Okay, so what you've seen, what Lori is referring to are two publications that recently appeared looking at cross-protection. So if I vaccinate against 16 and 18, can I reduce infection and disease caused by HPV types that are related? And the two types mainly focused on are 31 and 45. And both vaccine companies have shown that. What the question you're asking, Lori, is has that similar analysis been conducted looking at condyloma as the endpoint rather than CIN23 as the endpoint? And I have not seen those analyses. That doesn't mean it hasn't been done, but I have not seen those. And I know that is not published at this point. But this concept of the generally naive HPV population, the 14 negatives, that has been looked at in other papers, and I can search and see what I can find. Yes?
Most of the other 10 types are high-risk viruses, which normally wouldn't be expected
right
to produce external lesions anyway.
That's right.
Are we looking at other low-risk viruses, or conversely, better endpoint for this study, which you're probably doing, is actually looking at neoplasia, but you don't have enough sample size yet?
So we really are constricted by the relatively small sample size. But also, this is, understand, I'm speaking on a Merck-funded and sponsored trial. And under their current clinical trials program, they're not extending to the non-oncogenic types for typing. So I'm not sure that Merck would ever have those data. They would have to make a decision to add those other non-oncogenic types into their platform. So I kind of doubt that we will see that coming from the Merck program. Now, you know, in surveillance, that would be an opportunity because I assume you're going to be typing, you know, multiple types. But let's go back to your original point. The majority of condyloma are caused by 6 and 11. So that's why we see such robust, you know, so even if you consider other HPV types, you're still going to have really high efficacy against that lesion. So then you say, is it worth going ahead and typing all the other non-oncogenic types? I don't know. But let me just make one other point. Unlike the female cancer story, the majority of cancers in men are caused by HPV 16 and 18, and there's not much evidence for the other types at this point. So the bang for the dollar in terms of this quadrivalent vaccine to reduce disease burden in men is maybe greater, even the percentage reduction in males may be greater because of the types that are involved in disease in men. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes?
In responding to Kelly, you mentioned the secondary outcomes of resistance and incidence of HPV infection. So can you tell us more about the result and regarding persistent incidence of vaccine type infection?
Right. So what we've shown, and we have a publication that's pending right now that'll detail all of this, 86% reduction in the new persistent infection, and let me define that. So these are men who entered the trial negative for one of the vaccine types. They acquired one of the vaccine type infections, and that infection persisted for 6 months or longer. We see very robust efficacy against those infections for all four types. And it's in the very high 80s in terms of percent efficacy. In terms of reduction of one-time infection or more, it is lower, and that includes men who have what we call transient infections. We only detected it once and then never saw it again, plus those who persisted. And I'm struggling to remember the exact number, so I don't want to give it because I'm sure I'll say it wrong. But I can get that number for you. We have it.
Are those all vaccine power HPV types or all possible
HPV
types?
So did we look at the reduction in persistent infection with the 10 additional HPV types? I have not seen that analysis yet. Okay, thank you.